And good evening, everyone. Welcome to the August 2011 edition of Outbeat Now, one of the four programs you can hear on Outbeat Radio for and about the LGBT community here in the North Bay. Outbeat Radio airs every Sunday night at 8 p.m. only here on KRCB. I'm Greg Moralia, and I'm here with my co-host, Jeff Basham. We've got a full hour of news and information for you, starting with Jeff's personal story about the continuing FDA ban prohibiting gay men from donating blood. And then Equality California's new executive director, Roland Palencia, will join us, and he'll be here to talk about marriage equality and its connection with the Fair Education Act. On Outbeat Youth, I'll be talking with the authors of a new book called Queer, the Ultimate LGBT Guide for Teens. All of that right after Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, August 28th, 2011. Human Rights Campaign President Joe Solomonese will be stepping down in the coming months from his leadership role at the nation's largest LGBT political organization. Solomonese has led the organization since March of 2005, and during several historic successes like the passage of the Matthew Shepard James Byrd Hate Crime Prevention Act of 2009 and the passage of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell Repeal Act in 2010. But also during one of the most divisive moments of the organization's history, its support in 2007 for a version of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act that was not inclusive of gender identity. And here in California, a broad effort has been launched to educate the California public on the need for the recently passed Fair Education Act, which mandates the teaching of LGBT history in the state's schools. More than three dozen groups are banding together to stop the repeal effort from right-wing activists. Some of the organizations fighting to keep the Fair, Accurate, Inclusive, and Respectful Education Act alive include Equality California, the American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California, the California Council of Churches, the Sacramento Area Teachers, the Transgender Law Center, the Latino Equality Alliance, and the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center. After Governor Jerry Brown signed the act into law, conservative groups launched a plan to have it repealed by popular vote. More than 500,000 signatures need to be gathered to qualify the ballot measure for next June's election. It's not yet clear how the groups will get the word out on the importance of the Fair Education Act, which mandates teaching not only about the work of gay civil rights activists, but also about the achievements of disabled people. Carolyn Lobb, Gay Straight Alliance Network Executive Director, said, "The Fair Education Act enables all California students to learn an honest account of history, which does include the contributions of women, people of color, LGBT people, people with disabilities, and other historically underrepresented groups." And here in the North Bay, the Queer Congress, a group of representatives from local LGBT organizations, clubs, and businesses, will meet again Friday, September 9th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Sarah Smith Positive Images Center in Santa Rosa. The group met last February and was attended by more than 30 individuals. Nancy Vogel and Jim Foster, both of Positive Images, will again host the Queer Congress meeting. Nancy Vogel said, "As our Sonoma County LGBTQQI community grows, it's time again to gather and discuss the state of our state. We invite representatives of every group and organization serving our community to begin a new conversation about how we can work together and better support each other." Participants will enjoy beverages and snacks and an opportunity to meet new folks in the area, as well as to gather with people with whom they've worked for years. The meeting will be a clear indication of how the local LGBT community is well established and continuing to grow. Some of the well-known organizations that will be represented include Face to Face, the Billy Club, GaySonoma.com, Positive Images, the Russian River Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, We Mean It Productions, and of course, your Outbeat Radio team. Ellen Marymont Silver, producer from We Mean It Productions, said of the last meeting, "When so many different groups from a community come together, it's exciting and inspiring. The meeting was a great reminder that we have lots of work and fun to share with each other, and it seemed like everyone there was looking forward to doing just that." The local transgender community will also be well represented by Jackie Nugent, who heads the trans group, Rachel Sutter, who runs TGNB, and Dr. Suji Tamar Matas, who last year founded Trans Sonoma Transgender Wellness Project. If you represent a group and you'd like to participate in the next Queer Congress, give Positive Images a call at area code 707-568-5830. Now here's your list of events for the coming week. On Thursday, September 1st from 7 to 9 p.m., the Positive Images Youth Group will gather for its weekly meeting at the Santa Rosa High School. And on Saturday, September 3rd at 6 p.m., Out and About Santa Rosa will gather at a private home for a potluck and game night. For more information, go to the Out and About Santa Rosa's webpage on meetup.com. And on Sunday, September 4th at 9 p.m., Z Productions presents Fresh, an LGBT dance party and social event at the Aubergine Vintage Emporium and Cafe, 755 Petaluma Avenue in Sebastopol. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat Radio News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia.
Welcome back to Outbeat Now on KRCB FM Santa Rosa. I'm Jeff Basham. I'd like to share a personal story tonight. In July 2006, when I was coming to terms with the fact that I am gay, one day I went to our local blood bank for my routine donation of blood. For at least 5 years prior, I had been donating blood about every 6 weeks. It was my way of giving back, because I would not be alive today if it had not been for receiving blood transfusions at birth. Because I had survived in this way, I enjoyed giving blood to help others survive in the way that I had. One question on the forum had always made me a bit nervous. It asked, "If you are male, have you had sex with another male, even once since 1977? I realize now that my answer of no might have been challenged by some, but my very limited sexual activity at that time was nothing that I considered to qualify me as needing to answer yes to that question. I was always allowed to donate blood, and my blood was never deferred. Until that one day in 2006. I went to donate blood as I had done those many times before. I was given the questionnaire and proceeded to fill it out as I had done before. This time, since I had finally started to be honest about who I was and had joined a gay support group, and also now had reason that I should answer yes to the dreaded question about my sex life, I did so. The visit proceeded as normal, until the interview nurse saw my answer to that dreaded question. She verified by asking the question again, and asked for my answer verbally. Looking particularly uncomfortable, she said that she would be right back and left the room. She came back with another nurse. This nurse had the supervisor name tag on. The supervising nurse reviewed my questionnaire and asked again if my answer was accurate. Then I knew things were going wrong. She pulled a bid binder off the shelf that said FDA regulations on the spine. She flipped to the tab labeled for that particular question number, and she showed me the procedure that said I would not be allowed to donate blood. It just so happened that I had gotten an HIV and STD test done the week before, and I had the results in my car. I asked if I should get those test results. She said that unfortunately she would not be able to take my blood even with those test results. Then she dropped the atomic bomb. And she told me that since I had answered the way that I had, that I would be permanently deferred via my social security number nationwide and never be allowed to donate blood again. She also asked that I inform all of my past, present, and future sexual partners that they should also not attempt to donate blood. She apologized, but with little empathy, she asked me to leave. I did so, feeling like my heart had been ripped out of my chest, stomped on, and then handed back to me. Since this was my way of giving back, and now I knew I would never be able to do it again, I was quite hurt. This was the last straw for me. I used the pain to launch myself out of my rut about lying to everyone about who I was, and within a few months I had come out to my family and all my close friends. But it wasn't until almost a year later that I told anyone this story. When my friends asked me to attend blood drives at the college I was attending or at other locations, I simply made up a story about how I took a medicine that was not allowed and I could no longer donate blood. Although, each time I saw the signs advertising a blood drive, I felt the emotional pain of that dreaded day all over again. At some point in the next year, I found a video and website called BloodSense. I would like to play this video, which has a similar story to mine, but goes a few steps further, and I think really drives the dilemma that the outdated ban presents home.
This is Sally. This is John and his boyfriend of 3 years, Mark. Sally is what you might call a wild child. She spends most evenings at the bars, entertaining the guys, drinking, taking painkillers of questionable legality, drinking some more, smoking, and generally abusing her body and endangering her health. Most nights she manages to take home some random guy she's just met. She's very popular at the bars because she never asks her sexual partners to use a condom. She has her fun, no strings attached. And she's made a habit of these one-night stands for the last 5 years or so. John and Mark, on the other hand, live a much quieter life. When they're not at work, they enjoy taking walks together, keeping in shape, telling jokes, shopping together, and going out for coffee. Their favorite way to spend an evening is curled up together, just watching TV. Since John started dating Mark, they've become quite religious, going to church every Sunday. They've decided to wait until they're married to have sex. But even though John has been celibate for 3 years, he feels safer if he gets HIV tests every year as part of his physical, just in case. His most recent one was last week and he was, again, healthy and totally disease-free. Since America is constantly experiencing a blood shortage, this blood donation volunteer was very excited to see John when he arrived to donate, and John was happy to be there. His sister was in an accident a few years back and wouldn't be alive today if it wasn't for the generosity of strangers who donated blood. John took the questionnaire seriously and answered all the questions truthfully. One question asked whether he has had sexual contact with another male, even once, since 1977. John tried to explain that while he did receive oral sex from another man once, it happened over 3 years ago, he's been celibate since then, and he just had a clean bill of health from a doctor last week. The screener sympathized with John's story, but the rules are mandated by the federal government. If you are a man who has had any kind of sexual contact with another man, even once since 1977, you cannot give blood. Sally also went to donate blood this week, and she too was totally honest when answering the questionnaire. But Sally was allowed to donate. Nobody cares that in the month before donating, she had unprotected sex with 19 different men. She has never had an HIV test, but that doesn't matter either. Now, just imagine that tomorrow night, God forbid, your loved one is in a serious accident and needs a blood transfusion to save their life. John and Sally are the only two people who tried to donate compatible blood in your area. John was turned away, so that means your loved one will receive Sally's blood. Or, what would be even worse, maybe somebody else got Sally's blood first and there was nothing left for your loved one. John would have been happy to donate, and his blood might have saved the life of your loved one. But the FDA's outdated policy denied John the opportunity to save a life. How could this be? How could there be any scientific explanation for this nonsensical result? In 2006, the American Red Cross, which collects about half the blood in the nation, petitioned the FDA to change the policy, saying that the current lifetime deferral for men who have had sex with other men is medically and scientifically unwarranted. So, why is our government doing this? Why did the FDA affirm its policy in March 2007 to ban gay men for life? Obviously, it's discrimination. There is absolutely no medical reason to reject John's blood donation. The simple, ugly truth is that John and people like him are rejected simply because they're gay, and your loved one may die as a result. Americans should not tolerate such backwardness from our own leaders. It's time to bring sense back into America's blood collection policies. Please pass this video on to your friends, and please get involved.
If you'd like to share this video that you've just heard with family or friends, simply search for it on YouTube by typing in BLOODSENSE, BloodSense, as one word. It is important to acknowledge the reasons for the gay blood donation ban and why it was enacted by the FDA in 1985. Blood services commonly justify these bans against MSM, men who have had sex with men, using the statistically high prevalence of HIV and hepatitis of MSM in population studies. The last statistical and epidemiological review into blood service policy in the UK found that if the ban on MSM donating blood were to be lifted, that the risk of HIV entering the bloodstocks would increase by 500%. There has been a lot of criticism of the ban. Objections are generally based on the idea that improvements in testing and other safeguards have reduced the risk from transfusion-transmitted HIV to an acceptable level. Blood shortages are common, and critics of the policies point out that excluding healthy donors only makes the shortage problem worse. Ideal inventories are at least a 3-day supply, but many blood centers struggle to meet this demand. Other criticism stems from the fact that the ban is a blanket ban, encompassing all men who have had sex with another man, even once during their lifetime. Critics claim that a promiscuous heterosexual male is a higher risk donor than a gay or bisexual man in a monogamous relationship, but the former will usually be allowed to donate blood. Furthermore, other high-risk activities such as paying or being paid for sex have a set deferral period before the donor is allowed to donate blood, whereas MSM donors are deferred indefinitely. In the U.S., for example, potential donors that are MSM may never donate, and likewise, those who have engaged in being paid for sets or who have ever injected non-medical drugs are also deferred indefinitely. But their sexual partners, including those that pay for sets, are only deferred for 12 months. There have been at least 4 clear calls for change to the policy. In 2006, the American Association of Blood Banks, the American Red Cross, and America's Blood Centers all supported a change from the current U.S. policy of a lifetime deferral of MSM to 1 year since the most recent contact. One model suggested that this change would result in one additional case of HIV transmitted by transfusion every 32.8 years. The American Association of Blood Banks has suggested making this change since 1997. The FDA did not accept the proposal and had concerns about the data used to produce the model, citing that additional risk to recipients was not justified. In April 2010, the New York City Council passed a resolution calling on the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to eliminate the ban, stating, "This ban was based on prejudice, a knee-jerk reaction, and misunderstandings about the HIV/AIDS disease. Given the constant need for blood, it does not make common sense to prohibit donations from an entire population." On August 19, 2009, the Assembly Judiciary Committee in California passed AJR 13, the U.S. Blood Donor Non-Discrimination Resolution, calling upon the FDA to end the MSM blood ban. On June 1, 2010, the Washington, D.C. City Council passed a resolution calling on the FDA to reverse the lifetime deferment of blood donations by MSM since 1977 in favor of a policy that protects the safety and integrity of the blood supply that is based on an up-to-date scientific criteria. The most recent attempt to call for a change to the policy happened last month. In a question-and-answer document requested by Senator John Kerry and Representative Mike Quigley, made public last month, the HHS Department outlined steps that the Blood, Organ, and Tissue Safety Working Group have identified as necessary before gay and bisexual men are allowed to donate blood. Senator Kerry said in a statement, "We've been working on this for a long time in a serious way, and I'm glad that Secretary Sebelius responded with concrete steps to finally remove this policy from the books. HHS is doing their due diligence, and we plan to stay focused on the end game, a safe blood supply, and an end to this discriminatory ban. LGBT advocates also praised HHS for taking steps towards allowing gay and bisexual men to donate blood. We will continue to follow this developing story on the Outbeat Radio News. This has been Jeff Basham for Outbeat Radio.
Thanks, Jeff. Well, our first guest tonight is here to tell us more about one of the stories you heard on tonight's Outbeat News segment. Roland Palencia started work earlier this summer as the new Executive Director of Equality California. Roland, welcome to Outbeat Now.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg.
Well, let's get right to it. Week after next, the California Supreme Court is holding another hearing related to marriage equality here in California. Tell us where you see this all going.
Well, you know, we definitely are very supportive of the case. We filed an amicus brief in support of the case, and we obviously would like that ruling to be decided in our favor. And there is going to be on September 6th, right after Labor Day weekend, we're going to ask people to tune in. There is going to be oral arguments that will be heard by the state's Supreme Court on the issue of whether the proponents of Proposition 8 actually have a standing, meaning can they represent that case, given that neither the governor or the attorney general are willing to defend Proposition 8. They feel that that is unconstitutional, and they are not willing to defend that. So the proponents of Proposition 8 want to have what you might say the rights to defend the case, and so the oral arguments are going to be heard. No decision will be made on September 6th, but I think it will be really important for the community to tune in. We have a lot of the work that we have done has been around closing the inequalities between marriage among heterosexual couples and domestic partnerships to make sure that every inequality that exists in that dual and unequal system is as equal as it can be. But obviously, the answer to this is that we want full marriage equality, not only at the state level, but also at the federal level. So that's why it's important that this struggle, in addition to being won at the state level, that we also defeat DOMA. So that's the, to make sure that we have not only the state rights, but also the federal rights.
Right. And that's a whole nother battle, isn't it? I've heard the term marriage equality and same-sex marriage used. Is there a difference? Should we be using one more than the other?
I think that, you know, one is marriage equality basically does not qualify it as either being heterosexual or gay. So I think that there's definitely an advantage to using that. And obviously the word equality is something that our movement has really branded. When people say equality, they think about LGBT people and fighting for our civil rights. So so I think that that's a very, to use equality in as many ways as possible is really important, because that's really our fight for equality and dignity. And same sex, I think that in some cases, it might not make sense to say marriage equality. Contextually, it might be better to say same-sex, so it would not be lost in the translation, but I think the preferred term that I use and that many people in the equality movement use is marriage equality.
Well, that makes sense. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. Last month, Governor Brown signed into law the Fair Education Act, which we talked about earlier on our news segment tonight. And almost immediately, opponents filed papers to get a referendum on the ballot in June to reverse that law and to make it actually illegal to talk about LGBT history in schools. What is the other side afraid of?
I think they're afraid of the truth, of the accuracy. The Fair Education Act, the first word in the Fair Education Act stands for fair, accurate, inclusive, and respectful. I think that's what they're afraid of, that of the fairness, of the accuracy, of the inclusiveness, and the fact that there will be a respectful way of talking about gay people. They want to always portray us as a community that is a threat to families and children. And but when we But we know that when people are educated and people have the experience of an alternative narrative, that people start changing their minds. And so they're afraid of the fact that the prejudices that they have will be challenged, and will be challenged not only by other people, but maybe even people within their own family, individuals who are close to them, their networks, but also their own children.
Now, you talk about children and protecting children, and of course, that's the same argument that was used in the Proposition 8 campaign, that somehow marriage equality had something to do with protecting children. Are these two issues connected?
Completely. Again, we did not lose Proposition 8 on the merits of marriage in and of itself. Obviously, that was clearly an issue. Some people agree or disagree. But when we started to lose support, so let me make that clear. You know, clearly there are people who oppose marriage equality no matter what. But I think that we lost support even among some of the people who are supporting us. You know, once they started to link the whole marriage issue to kids in schools. So, you know, clearly the Fair Education Act and the fact that we're going to, you know, have to address this issue of how harmful it is for students not to know about each other's contributions, you know, but also how harmful it is to have these anti-gay, campaigns. That, you know, we, you know, will be able to, you know, make more of a connection to the fact that no matter what issue we're talking about, whether it's marriage equality, whether it's employment discrimination, whether it's hate crimes, whether it's bullying, that until we address this core issue of us being harmed to children and families, we're going to be swimming upstream. So clearly this core issue has an impact on every other issue that we can think of, including marriage equality.
Sure, sure. Well, tell us what we should be doing as a community. How can we fight this referendum?
Well, a couple of things. You know, one is that we had to really start thinking as to the opposition is already defining us in their own terms and is obviously full of lies, cruel stereotypes, and, you know, this real, very homophobic, you know, kind of campaign. So they want to, this is not going to be a referendum about the merits of whether our community has contributed to the social, cultural, economic, or political life of California and the United States. The referendum is going to be on our community. They're going to make this a referendum on our community. So I think it's really important that we start really having the conversation as to how we're going to define them, you know, because people are going to have to, you know, should disqualify, and we're doing everything in our power to make sure that it doesn't. People are going to, the voters are going to have to make a decision as to who is more credible. And I think that we need to really discredit the propaganda, the lies, the accusations, and the hostile environment that they create that in many cases leads to violence, and including self-harm, and in some cases even to suicide. So one of the critical things that we can do as a community is to start thinking of, you know, how do we, make that, our opposition a lot less credible because of the lies, the stereotypes, and the harm that they have done. And it's really important that we, you know, start thinking in those terms.
Right, right. Well, if you'd like to learn more about the Fair Education Act and the work Equality California is doing around this issue, fighting the referendum, as well as marriage equality, be sure to go to their website at www.eqca.org. Roland Palencia, the new executive director of Equality California, thank you so much for being with us tonight on Outbeat Now. Good luck in this fight, and we look forward to having you back again on our show in the future.
Thank you, Greg.
And we'll be back with more right after the music break.
On nights like this, when the world's a bit amiss, and the lights go down across the trailer park, I get down, I feel head, feel on the verge of going mad. And it's time to punch the clock. I put on some makeup, turn on the tic tac, and pull the wig down on my head. And suddenly I'm Miss Midwest Midnight Checkout Queen. Until I head home and I put myself to bed. I look back on where I'm from, look at the woman I've become, and the strangest things seem suddenly routine. I look up from my vermouth on the rocks, a gift trap wakes still in the box of towering velveteen. I put on some makeup, some lover makeup, and pull the wig down from the shelf. And suddenly I'm Miss Beehive 1963. Until I wake up and I turn back to myself. Some girls, they got natural ease, they wear it any way they please, with their French flip curls and their perfume magazines. Wear it out, let it down. This is the best way that I've found to be the best you've ever seen. I put on some makeup and turn up the 8-track. I'm pulling the wig down from the shelf. Suddenly I'm Miss Farrah Fawcett from TV. Until I wake up and I turn back to myself. Shack pie, little Bob, Johnny Hammond too. Sausage curds, chicken wings, and Tommy cousin you. When you blow, John, fill it back, Tony, one way too. Everybody.
Put on some makeup, turn on the 8-track. I'm pulling the wig down from the shelf.
Suddenly I'm this punk rock star of stage and screen, and I ain't never.
That was Wig in a Box from the Hedwig and the Angry Inch soundtrack. You're listening to Outbeat Now on KRCB FM Santa Rosa. It's time now for the Outbeat You segment.
Please put my soul, I feel love, I am so alive.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a segment for and about the LGBT youth community here in the North Bay and beyond. We're a regular part of Outbeat now, and you'll find us right here on the fourth Sunday of every month, only on KRCB Radio. Well, it's the last week of August. Most of you have probably already returned to school after what I hope was a great summer. And wouldn't it be great if you could walk into your school library and find an LGBT book section? And as a young person who still has a lot of questions about sexual identity and what it's all about to be gay, wouldn't it be great if you could find a guide that was written just for you? Well, our guests tonight have just released The Ultimate LGBT Guide for Teens. Now, I had a chance to read this book over the summer, and all I can tell you is I sure wish I had this book when I was in high school. Here with us tonight are the two authors of Queer, The Ultimate LGBT Guide for Teens, Kathy Belge and Mark Bischke. Welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thank you.
So let's have you start out by telling us a little bit about yourselves, where you grew up, and most importantly, how you met. Kathy, let's start with you.
Okay. My name's Kathy Belge, and I grew up in Syracuse, New York, and moved out here to Portland, Oregon about 15 years ago.
And Mark, how about you?
Well, I grew up in Detroit, and I made my way to San Francisco about 16 years ago. So we're both West Coasters for about a decade and a half, I guess.
Okay. And how did you two meet?
We actually were introduced by the publisher. They asked us to come together. Our editor, actually, asked us to come together. She thought we'd be a great match to write this book, and that's how we met.
I think it was a perfect fit almost from the beginning, just because we both brought different areas of experience and to the project.
And also different, a little bit different writing styles, which I think really melded well in the book.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is, as I read it, it sounded like you two have been best friends your whole life. I mean, that was my assumption, so I'm really surprised to hear you say that.
We did get along really well. I think it was just, it was really good to kind of talk with someone, who represented a different, different kind of queer, to kind of complement each other. And I think we found each other, we melded really well together, as Kathy said.
Mm-hmm. No, there's no doubt. And I think that really comes out, throughout the book. Like I said, it sounded like you've been best friends. So Zest Books, do they do this type of, is this their focus? Is writing books like this or bringing people together to do it?
Writes books for teens, and they do a lot of self-empowerment books for teenagers.
Okay.
This is their first book for queer teenagers, however.
Okay. And where did the idea for writing this book at this particular time come from?
Actually, I pitched the idea to them to write a coming-out book for teen lesbians. And then they came back and said they wanted it to be, they would like something more universal, and brought Mark on.
Mm-hmm. And then I came aboard.
Okay. And Mark, had you ever thought about writing a book like this before?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely, I follow a lot of queer and youth issues in my regular work as the editor of a paper out here. And, I definitely saw a need for it. And it was definitely something that I've written about before. I don't think I ever thought of an entire book, so it was really fortunate that Kathy, had the idea and that I could come aboard with my different perspective.
So, Kathy, when you thought about writing that first book for lesbian teens, and then as you came together and wrote this book, what were your hopes? What were your goals for this book?
Well, a little bit of my background. First of all, I worked for 15 years with LGBT youth. I was a case manager and a program director of the largest queer youth organization here in Oregon called SMRC. And also, I was a writer, and I was writing advice columns and books for adult lesbians. And I wanted to bring those two together, and I saw in my writing on About.com and with my advice column in Curve magazine, I would hear from a lot of teenagers with different questions. And so I realized that there was a need out there for teens, and I knew that with my background that I would have a good chance of writing something that people would be interested in reading.
One of the things that struck me when I first saw it is that, you know, there's been all this publicity about young people coming out at 12 and 13 and 14 years old. And it was almost like, well, gosh, it's 2011. Do we really need a new guide for how to come out? It seems like it's so simple, and yet it isn't. Mark, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely in the past few years, a lot of headlines and a lot of stories about, teens coming out younger and younger. And, you know, and I mean, we embarked upon the book before kind of the tragic rash of suicides that brought sure. kind of like queer youth issues to national attention. But, you know, I think one of the things that's happening is this is a really large country, first of all, and, you know, there's rural areas and there's, with the internet and people have more access in some parts, but in other parts they don't. And so I think it was good to come out with kind of one guide that would help people at different stages of their coming out process, and also just for people who are questioning and want to know what this is all about because they're seeing it more in the news.
You know?
So I think it was good to kind of have like one central thing to turn to, because basically a lot of these kids who are coming out more and more, you know, there isn't really a place for them to go except Wikipedia and maybe, you know, online sites with perhaps untrustworthy information. So, you know, we wanted to kind of like speak to people, you know, from inside and say, like, these are the things we went through, these are the things you might encounter, and in other parts of the country you might encounter something different.
Kathy, I saw in the book that you used some youth advisors. What role did they play in helping you shape the content?
Yeah, the youth advisors were great. They basically took a look at the whole manuscript, and they gave us feedback and advice about all kinds of things, the content as well as the voice and what was included and what wasn't included. They were really helpful in helping shape the way the book turned out.
And what about what age group were the advisors, or if you had to say what age group the book was targeted for, is targeted for, what would that be?
The book is targeted towards 13 to 17-year-olds. And I think that the advisory group was primarily 15 and 16-year-olds.
Well, the book seems to have three major components. Tell our listeners, when they pick up a copy, what are they going to find inside?
Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, we tried to organize it so that there was the general part of the book, which is more information about what queer is, advice on coming out and whether you should come out, advice on dealing with bullies, dealing with some of the issues that are going to come out with, like sex and relationships and dating. So basically the main part of the book is the advice part of the book that just guides readers through this being queer. The second part is our personal stories, where we kind of talk about what we went through growing up and how we were feeling, and kind of just putting our personal perspective in it, because I think speaking as people who had to deal with our own queerness, I think that really was important, so that, you know, it's not we're not like handing down advice from the mountain. You know, I mean, we've gone through some of these things, and we wanted to share our experience. And then also throughout the book, we have kind of historical facts and figures about to appreciate our long and varied queer history, you know, throughout the ages, as well as a resources section. So there's kind of more information that people can turn to for their history and for their future.
Oh, awesome. Well, Zest Publications was kind enough to give us a copy of Queer, the Ultimate LGBT Guide for Teens. And if you are a teen listener or you know a teen who needs this book, be caller number 2 and we'll send you your own copy. The number here is 707-584-2020. That's 584-2020. Be caller number 2, and you'll get a copy of this book. Kathy, one of the things that I noticed about the book is that it's very upbeat. It has a very upbeat theme. Did you write it this way on purpose?
Yeah, I think, you know, Mark and I are both happy that we are queer. You know, it's not something we chose, but it's something that we both have embraced. And we want to bring that out. We don't want people to feel like being queer is some terrible, tragic thing that you have to, you know, be ashamed of or hide or anything like that. Like, it's something that we want to celebrate, and that's hopefully the message that people will get from reading this book.
Well, it's interesting you chose the word queer to use. In my time in high school, that was the absolute worst thing you could ever be called. No one would ever want to, you know, use that word to self-identify. Did you get input from the youth advisors for use of that particular word, or what was the thinking behind that?
Well, I think when you're young, you know, it's sexuality is so fluid, and you have so many different questions, and you try different things, and you know, queer at this time in history is the word that has been reclaimed from an insult and is now a positive word to many young people, or at least people who have embraced their queerness. And so it's also a great term that acts kind of as an umbrella that's welcoming to all different kinds of sexualities and all different kinds of people. And so we want it to be as general as possible, because if we just chose, like, you know, one specific aspect and addressed that, I don't feel like we could reach out to as many people as we want to support and help and help as we can.
Kathy, you include some really good information about coming out and how to deal with parents in school. And give our listeners some of your best advice on what you've learned.
Well, I think as far as coming out to parents, I think, schools too, the number one thing is to be pretty certain yourself before you're going to tell somebody who might not be very receptive to the idea. To maybe try it out with somebody that you know is supportive, maybe like a best friend or maybe an older queer cousin or uncle or aunt, and to talk, or even your peers that may be struggling, just to figure it out, I think, first before you do come out. You know, some parents are going to be fine and supportive, and some are going to be not so supportive. And so I think it's really important to have a solid identity and standing before you come out to those kind of people.
Right. Mark, from your experience coming out as a young person, what will readers find in terms of your advice in the book?
I think probably the most valuable piece of advice is that every coming out experience is different, and there's no set script, and you know, everyone has a unique kind of process, and I think the best I could do was maybe share my process and share our stories. I mean, one of the great things that's happening right now with the It Gets Better project is that gay people, lesbians, bisexual, transgender people are starting to tell their stories more. And I think one of the most valuable things you can do is just communicate from your own story, and also, you know, tell people that you have to kind of just be sure of yourself, like Kathy said, and, you know, make sure you're doing it for the right reasons and not just to maybe shock your parents or, you know, try to rebel in that way, and make sure that you are in a safe enough place that you can do it, you know, where you won't face any kind of, you know, violence or interruption in your future that would be perhaps devastating, and then find the inner strength and go for it. But realize that everybody is different, and that you have to make your own judgments. And I think that's also part of maturing.
Sure,
knowing how to make your own judgments and coming out is kind of a way of maturing.
Talk a little bit about how you struck a balance between the male perspective and female perspective, and then of course the whole transgender perspective. How did that all work for you?
I think it just naturally kind of flowed. Both Mark and I were very sensitive to the issue of trans teens and people who identify somewhere, you know, along the queer spectrum. I think we both were just very sensitive to, you know, bisexuality, people who are gay, people who are lesbian, people who are trans. It wasn't really an issue that we had to work on or try to strike a balance with. It just came naturally.
Well, I know the chapter on relationships really could be as valuable for adults as it is for the young people. I mean, there's some really good foundational concepts there. But tell us about some of the important parts of that chapter and some of the surveys and checklists that you included.
But, I mean, one of the things we have is we talk about healthy relationships. There's a checklist that we have, which, you know, we try to make these quizzes a little bit fun, kind of like a Cosmo quiz or something like that, where maybe you'll see yourself in this and maybe get a chuckle. but also to bring some good information in there. Like, you know, I think when you're young and you're starting to have a relationship, you might not know the signs of what's okay and what's not okay, and it's all a learning process. But we try to spell it out a little bit for people so that they can, you know, sort of see, well, maybe that jealousy isn't cute and fun, but maybe it is actually bordering on abusive, that kind of thing.
I also think, too, that, you know, we tried to, one of the reasons that I felt it was important for a book to come out is there hadn't really been a guide written since, like, 2003, you know, for queer youth, and I wanted to, we thought it was important. So many things had happened there, like social, since then, like social networking and online relationships and meeting people online, and so we wanted to make sure that there was also some guidelines in there to, you know, kind of make sure this is kind of saying, like, this is okay to do and this may not be okay to do, and, all, you know, don't immediately put your whole self online, and be careful of what you're sharing with strangers, and also just you know, don't conduct your entire relationship online. You know, take time to be together, and so we wanted to address that kind of aspect. I think one of the fun parts that we had writing the chapter on dating was that it is so different to kind of like be a young person and want, and then a young queer person and kind of want to figure out, is the person you have a crush on also going to be into you, and how do you figure that out, right, and how do you ask someone on a date, because there isn't really like, you know, a guide for that if they're looking towards heterosexual relationships. It's a little different, and so I think it was really interesting and fun for us to kind of like you know, give tips on that.
Well, I think one of the most valuable parts of the book is the chapter on sex. You know, it's certainly rare enough for parents to sit down with their straight kids and, you know, talk about the birds and the bees. And except for one of the episodes in Glee, where Kurt was talking to his dad, or his dad approached him about sex, I've never really heard of parents having the talk with their LGBT kids. Tell us what readers will find in this section of the book.
Well, we just wanted to be frank, because there's not a lot of places where queer teenagers can go to get information about sex. You know, like, even if they did have that kind of relationship with their parents may not even have the information. You know, we talk about things like, what does it mean to lose your virginity if you're queer? Because there's such, even that has such a heterosexual definition in most places. We talk about a lot about self-esteem and not doing anything before you're ready. But we also talk about, you know, the joys that can be had with a sexual experience with somebody.
Yeah, exactly. I think that a lot of times the conversations about sex, especially with queer people in a health context, quickly turn dark. You know what I mean? And they're not comforting and celebratory as they should be. And we wanted to maintain a tone of getting across information, but and being very frank, but also just saying that this is a good thing, and these are good things for you to know, and as well as protecting yourself. You don't have to feel shameful about knowing these things, and I think it was pretty valuable for us to put out some frank talk to questioning and queer kids, because, you know, they don't get that access to that information. And in fact, I think it's good for adults to know too, who may have a queer questioning child. My mom read it, and she told me she learned some things.
Right.
So
right.
I think it's like kind of like is good to have it out there.
So. Well, I agree with you. I think it's the perfect book for a parent who may have an LGBT child to have and then provide, because it does lay it out very, very well. Both the parent and the young person can learn at the same time, and that's great.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even before someone's ready to have sex, it's good to have this information.
Right.
Yeah.
I would have loved this information at age 15, you know.
Right. Well, you're not going to get it in schools. My partner teaches fifth grade. And just this year, in their little puberty class that they do toward the end of the year, for the very first time, they included in the required curriculum just comment about what gay means. And what homosexual means, but there's no conversation at all about the sex part of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly a lot of information there about heterosexual sex, but nothing in there other than the mention of gay and homosexual. And I guess that's some progress, but it's not sufficient.
Yeah, it would be good to open up the conversation more and have access to more information other than what you're going to find from a random search online.
Right.
You know, and I think that's another thing we talk about in the book too, is that it's okay to not have sex, and you know, you can be queer and not have to rush out, and you don't have to prove it by having sex. And I think a lot of times, just with the sexualization of identity in general, that's gone on a lot in contemporary society. I mean, I think that's also a good message to get across, is that you don't have to define yourself by going out and having sex. You can wait until you're ready, and it's fine.
Sure. Well, certainly one of the best parts of the book are the up-to-date references. Tell us about what readers will find. Kathy?
All right. Well, we tried to include information that's up-to-date. So we have information about websites that people can go to, different organizations for trans youth, for parents, religious organizations, some of our favorite queer books, some historical references that people might want to read, stuff like that.
It was fun to revisit some of our favorite books that we read, you know, growing up, and to discover a whole bunch of new books. There's really a lot of teen fiction that's coming out now that has queer characters in it or deals with queer themes, and it's just wonderful to see.
Mm-hmm.
And so we included some of those.
So where can people find the book?
People can find the book at their local independent bookstore. They can find it online at Amazon.com.
And we are hoping that we seem to be getting into the libraries as well, and we're hoping that school libraries will request it, and that also they'll be available through Gay Straight Alliance Network. So
great.
So, but for now, yeah, your independent bookstore or online.
Great. And we'll have a link for the book on Amazon.com anyway, on our own website at outbeatyouth.com. You can go there and check it out. The book is called Queer, the Ultimate LGBT Guide for Teens. Kathy and Mark, thanks so much for being with us tonight on Outbeat Youth.
Thank you so much.
Hey there. I'm Max Adler from Glee. I just wanted to take a minute to talk to anybody out there in elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, and even colleges that are being bullied or have ever been bullied. Recently, I've had the opportunity to sit down and talk to a lot of you out there, and it's been a privilege. It's been awesome. But I keep hearing the same scary thing over and over again, and it's that you feel you deserve to be bullied and that you have it coming to you and that there's nothing that you can do to stop it or change it and that nobody's, you know, has your back. I just want to let you know that's absolutely the wrong way of thinking, and it's not true. You do not deserve to be bullied at all. And I'll tell you a little secret, is most bullies are extremely insecure and want to knock you down a peg to feel better about themselves. So being who you are is what's awesome. It's what makes you special, interesting, fun to talk to, desirable. And I mean, I know that right now in school, your school is your entire universe, and fitting into the mold is what matters and it's what's so important. But believe me, it's not the coolest thing in the world to do. That breaking the mold and just being you and being who you are is awesome and really rewarding. And if you don't believe me, if you don't want to take my word for it, that's fine. But please call the Trevor Project or check out itgetsbetter.org. You'll see that there's an entire world out there just full of love, without judgment, without prejudice, without ignorance, that's ready just to talk to you and accept you for exactly who you are. So please check that out and just know that you're not alone in this. Take care of yourself, please.
And that's it for this edition of Outbeat Now. Tune in next Sunday night for Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer. Jeff and I will be back on the fourth Sunday of September with a special story about the final implementation of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. In the meantime, have a great week, everyone.